Hey, are you trying to get more done in your day, but it seems that less and less is happening? Well, we think we know the answer because busy is the new stupid. Stick around and we're going to show you how not to be that. Hey, if this weather looks better than where you're at, why don't you come join us for CruiseCon? February 7th through 12th out of Port Canaveral, Florida. You'll hear some amazing speakers like Chris Inglis. Also guests I've had on CISO Tradecraft such as Shawnee Delaney and Tim Brown. Go ahead and make that part of your plan. Go to cruisecon.com and you can use the code HARDY10 for a 10% discount. And there's also one for Tradecraft10. Hope to see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy. I'm your co-host, and I'm here with Ross Young, who has done some amazing research over this past year. As you know, he's got his book out and everything, but we're not plugging the book, sort of, kind of. But more interestingly, one of the things that I think we found is that as we're looking at a brand new year, and trying to come with New Year's resolutions and, you know, of course, exercise and eat right and do the right things and things such as that, we find out that very quickly we get bogged down. And the reason we get bogged down isn't a lack of motivation. It isn't a lack of desire. It's a lack of ability to prioritize all that noise that's out there. And so as a result, Ross has put together a framework that we've called Busy is the New Stupid that I think is worthy of discussion. And we're going to talk about it today. You're going to want to hear this because you're going to find that you're guilty of a bunch of these things, as am I. Ross, welcome.
Thanks again for having me back on the show. You know, I've just been thinking, how do I work smarter every year? And one of the biggest things that I find myself very guilty on is sometimes I am a people pleaser. I want to help so many people. And I find my calendar just gets completely full with helping so many people and taking so many meetings. And I'm like, man, where did that week go? I felt like some weeks I just wasn't productive because I wasn't focusing on the strategic things. I did a lot of busy things. And I think a lot of people can kind of relate to this. And so when I started coming up with this phrase, busy is the new stupid, everybody kind of jokes and laughs at that term. And so I knew there was something there and I needed to flesh it out a little bit. And so what I did is I kind of stole some inspiration from the MITRE ATT&CK framework. And let me go ahead and share my screen so you get a chance to kind of see what it looks like. If you go to the CISOTradecraft.com website, you'll see there's a section called Free Templates where you can just go and get a link to Busy is the New Stupid. And what you're going to see is, you know, as we mentioned, it's inspired by the MITRE ATT&CK framework. So you can see, how do people get an initial access to stealing time from us? How do they execute? How do they persist? How do they evade our defenses and impact us? And then there's some universal defenses, which we'll dig into. And all you have to do is just click on any of these. So if I click on the initial access, we'll get to see, you know, what are some of the ways that people steal our time and we become busy and perhaps less effective because we're focusing on the wrong things.
But yeah, so we're looking at things like a meeting overload because we got all these calendar invites. And of course, now is a good time to ask, do you really need to be in all these meetings? A lot of times we find out that you've got decisions that are made, but if you're not a decision maker, why are you there? Oh, well, you're there for situation awareness. Well, read the minutes. Well, you're providing the input. Well, do it in advance and things such as that. That's your technique T1001. So I love that. I've got MITRE ATT&CK up on my other screen here, and I'm looking across all the tactics and techniques. And so it's brilliant the way you put this together. Email bombardment, just overwhelming your inbox. I don't think any of us have an ability to get to a zero inbox unless you just, of course, delete all. And the idea is there's a constant stream of demands for us. And everything is more urgent than it should be. We end up with the tyranny of the urgent is what happens when we confuse importance with urgency. And we go back to the old matrix that was kind of the Eisenhower matrix, but also Stephen Covey picked up on that and being able to look at what is urgent, what is important, and things such as that. So those are some of the initial access techniques. And I'm thinking that this is a foundational framework. So let's have some fun with this. For you out there as a watcher or a listener, of course, if you're watching it, you're seeing. And if a listener, we're just kind of describing the stuff to you. If you have the ways that people are just getting initial access to you, maybe they just drop in on your office, okay? If you're back to the office and you're sitting there working and then somebody just shows up, they're standing there, right? Well, what do you want? You can't just really ignore them. That's one way of initial access. They just kind of show up. And so what we're going to do is we're going to crowdsource this. We're going to go to our LinkedIn page and give you opportunities to go ahead and let us know where you think inputs for this model could be, whether it's initial access, execution, persistence, defense, evasion, or ultimately the impact. And we'll give a shout out to the people who do it. So if it's, you know, Joe Wilson has said, hey, this is initial access technique. So kind of like a bug finding, because this is for everybody. We don't want to just do this a one and done episode. This ought to be transformational. And so that's where we're going to have some fun with this thing. And so I want you to start thinking carefully about all the ways that people get into your life that maybe they shouldn't be. It'd be nice to have a perfect gatekeeper, but the initial access, the breach, if you will, past your normal defenses is going to be one where they're going to go ahead and start stealing your time.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We don't want this just to be a Ross framework or a CISO Tradecraft framework. We want this to be a community framework where it gets smarter. We all learn. We all figure out ways to better protect our time. And, you know, I was just meeting with a professor at a university yesterday, and he told me, hey, when I come into the office, I get constantly bombarded by students coming by my office. And yes, I have office hours, but they come whenever they want, even if it's not my office hours. So a lot of times he said, I just start working from home instead of going into the office, just so I don't have that constant disruption of people walking into my office. And I think that's a great example of probably something maybe I didn't have initially into this busy as the new stupid framework where, you know, hey, it's a nice addition that we might be able to add. So opportunities like that, if you see something that's missing, let's talk about it. Let's see if it makes sense to add and really make this continue to grow so we all figure out how to save more time for ourselves.
Exactly. Now, of course, we're talking about some of these initial access techniques, the way that our defenses get breached, but let's talk about some of our defense and mitigation strategies. If you want to pull that back up on the screen, we find out that there's some initial ideas that we can have here, like calendar auditing. Review your meetings on a quarterly basis to determine whether these recurring meetings really need to happen. Have some justification for it. I remember years ago, now this is going back a long time, back when they used to print out reports on the mainframe. And then you would hand things out, and there was this huge printer bill, and the IT department was facing, you know, all these budget constraints. And so they said, hey, let's just kind of do a zero-based review because we've been printing these reports, some of them for years, and it might have been for a requirement that stopped existing. And so what they said is they said with each report, they went ahead and they put a little thing on top of it, said, you've got 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 1 week. Okay, time's up to justify. If you need it, no problem. You can have it. What percentage of those reports did they stop printing and nobody cared? 90% waste in that, which is pretty phenomenal. They got that far, but the time that it takes to go ahead and poke through it. So go ahead and audit your calendar. Come up with no meeting times. Basically, how do you do that? Schedule the meeting with yourself. Because I have a shared calendar, then Ross and I have a shared calendar. So if you say, hey, you want the two of us, then this, it sort of figures it out. Okay, this guy's free, this guy's free.
And I'll just add another piece on this meeting-free blocks. There's always two meeting blocks I put on my calendar every day. The first is lunch. If I don't actually book a lunch, then somebody will try to book over my lunch and then I'm like angry and hangry the whole day. So that's not good. The second thing is I actually book an hour or 2 hours a day to do emails. Because what I find is if I just, you know, allow everybody to, you know, schedule my whole time, then I don't even have time to do the emails that I need to go through. And then I end up having to work, you know, extra hours for my day. And then, you know, the work-life balance gets out of sync. So ways we take that are really, really helpful. Or maybe you take like, hey, every Fridays is just my time to work on my tasks. So maybe I need to build a strategic report. Maybe I need to brief somebody. All those things I know I'm going to need, you know, a number of hours to book. And so I just book a Friday so that I have that time when I'm not going to be disturbed and I can really go into deep thinking mode.
And I think having a good understanding of our own mental rhythms are important. I know that I do my best thinking early in the morning and, oddly enough, late in the afternoon. But from about 1 to 3 in the afternoon, don't ask me to do any deep thinking. For whatever reason, my brain is not going ahead and coming up with creative ideas. What a wonderful time to do routine stuff. Grind out that or take those meetings you don't want to take because you don't really need to be super present there. But if you're all on in the afternoon, save that time for yourself. Again, the idea is there's no one size fits all, but rather tune this strategy such that you're optimizing your own productivity. And once you've gone ahead and you've blocked out your best time for your best thinking, then you can go ahead and open it up to others. And then, as I said, go through these defensive mitigation strategies, but prioritizing and triaging your email and things like that and the like. So that's for initial access, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think you hit the nail on the head. If I'm a person who is the smartest in the morning, do the hard, deep thinking work first. And then, you know, maybe in the afternoon is when you do your email triage, because that isn't super deep thinking work. Mm-hmm. So I think that's exactly right. So now we can, you know, dive into execution and see what that looks like.
Alrighty, so execution, what are the things that are go ahead and make us busy and therefore kind of stupid? Well, multitasking. I don't know about you, but when I work on one thing at a time, I can line them up and knock them down. Of course, they don't always stay in line, but that's the idea, is that I am most effective when I am trying to go ahead and completely dedicate myself to a task. I know other people who aren't happy unless they get 2, 3, 5 things going on at once. And most of the time, you're going to lose effectiveness. Think about memory swapping on an old PC, where you go ahead and you brought a job in, you work on it, and then you got to swap the memory out and then swap the memory in for the next job. As humans, we're sort of the same thing. We have to go ahead and regain context. And speaking of context, if you keep switching around from different contexts and things such as that, if they're not related to each other, you're not able to get deep work. One of the things that I find in terms of my inability to get execution are interruptions. And that is to say, I try to tell people that are close to me that when I'm working, don't interrupt. Why? It's a little bit like waking you up at 2 in the morning saying, stand on your feet, on your feet, on your feet. Okay, go back to bed. Wait a minute. No, you're wide awake now. You're not deep into your task. And so what you want to do is, if you're at the office, have that people that understand, respect your time, your door's closed. But it's open most of the time, so people understand that it's not for you're trying to be isolationist. It's just, oh, Mr. Hart is really busy, we better leave him alone. And when you're at home, same sort of difficulty. Now, I haven't been able to train my dogs yet in terms of no interruptions, so that's why they end up on my lap during podcasts, and that's okay. But that's not a terrible interruption. But, you know, it's part of the benefit of working from home. But yeah, think about that. And then reactive. If you're in firefighting mode, and we go back to that urgent versus important. Remember back when I was in the Navy, I used to command the Center for Naval Leadership. And we had a slide that we took a look at the cubby where urgent, important. And we said things that are urgent and important are crises. Things that are important but not yet urgent, that's your planning quadrant. And then you have things that are not important but urgent, like the phone rings, and then not urgent, not important, like video games, stuff like that. Well, ideally, an effective organization, an effective person is going to be in what we call quadrant 2. They're spending their time on important things that are not yet urgent. Okay, so I'm doing a talk next month at CruiseCon, and I've got time to write the slides, and I'm writing the slides. As compared to the day before they're due, kind of like your fifth grader saying, Mom, I've got a homework assignment due tomorrow. It's a science project. Well, how long have you had it? 3 weeks. Any of us are parents that kind of nod, and we have long enough memories, we probably did the same thing ourselves. And so those are the things to think about. You know, what's your context, Ross?
So I would say, as I think about my career, there's been a lot of times where maybe I'm working on a presentation, But at the same time, I had Outlook open and I was checking emails the whole time. And in, even to date myself, I had Same Time open and I was getting, you know, little messages here and there. Now it's probably Slack or Messenger or WhatsApp or Signal. But, you know, all of these things, you know, kept pinging me. And so I was thinking about this PowerPoint and trying to write the words out, but constantly disrupted, which meant I couldn't really knock out that PowerPoint as clean as I wanted to. And so what I had to start doing was saying, okay, if I'm actually in a meeting, I'm turning off all disruptions, my phone isn't out, all these things are turned off. Or if I'm actually working on a PowerPoint, I'm going to ignore all of my messages until I'm done with this, and then come back during that time of the day when I have email time. Or between my meetings is actually when I just do a quick glance at my phone to see when I have messages from my boss I need to respond to. And so that prevents the context switching. That gives me dedicated time. And it turns out so much better. I mean, imagine if your subordinate is giving a presentation to you and all they do is see you keep checking your laptop and your phone. How does that make them feel? It makes them feel, you know, worthless because you're not even giving them your full attention. So those are some of the things I really had to overcome and think about if I wanted to, you know, be a better leader and actually have better content that was, let's say, created in a shorter timeline. And it saved me time.
Yeah, I remember, well, years ago, this is back when we had Blackberries, I was working for a small startup and they had the biggest client they had, like 80% of their business. And our CEO kept checking her email every few minutes on her BlackBerry while this guy is in a conversation. He was ready to storm out of there. And he just felt so disrespected by it. And I think she was kind of oblivious. You know, maybe it was a generational thing. But the point is, be present. If you can be present with your people, turn off a thing. What I've done with my email is you can set up Outlook very easily so that you have to hit F9 to pull your email. It doesn't ding and ding and dong and dong and keep showing up. My email, it's store and forward by definition. It backs up and it waits. Now, when I'm working, and there's some things like the Pomodoro, if you might have heard that, where you go ahead and have 25 minutes of work and then 5 minutes of get up and walk around and then set your timer again. That's great. But what I find is that my built-in timer is that when I hit F9, it's probably time to stand up and wander around because I'm looking for a distraction. But don't let the distractions interfere with you. Don't give them the initiative. Keep the initiative for yourself. So what are some of the defense and mitigation strategies that we can do here on the execution phase?
Yeah, so what we're talking about and what we want to really look at here is how do we do things as a single task? Like I said, for me, it's as simple as if I'm working on a PowerPoint, I'm going to close the application for checking email. I'm going to close the application for checking Slack. And so the only application that's open on my laptop at that time is just PowerPoint while I'm writing those things. Another thing to do is let's call it task batching. You know, these are three things I have to get done this day, and I'm just going to focus on doing them one right after another. And then after I do that, I can actually feel good about, you know, accomplishing those things. So those, I think, are really good examples. You mentioned the Pomodoro technique. Or maybe a simple thing. Hey, if I just book a meeting after a meeting after a meeting, I don't even get time for bathroom breaks. And I think we all need those. So, you know, just making sure you have time where you give yourself 5 minutes to walk around, stretch out so you don't get that hunchback in the office. You know, you actually get a little bit of time to, you know, just walk around and be a little bit healthier or stretch it while you can.
Yeah. And remember Mark Twain who said, if you have to eat a live frog, do it first thing in the morning. It's basically the biggest thing that you got to do that you don't want to do, but it's got to get done. Knock it out first, and then the rest of the day will go better. All right, let's talk a little bit about persistence.
Yeah. So when we talk about persistence, this is why is it we keep allowing these things to happen? I think one example that hits so many CISOs is this always on culture. And I'll give you a quick example. Do you use your phone for your alarm clock? Is your phone constantly with you on nights, on weekends, and you're always checking your messages, you know, even on the Saturdays, even on your vacations, and you just can't turn it off, right? There's some level of, you know, to an extreme, where you really need to dial that back and be present in your family life and not always have that. And just say, hey, look, my workday is between 9 and 5. If you need something, I need you to call me on the phone because I am not checking Slack. I am not checking emails after 5 p.m. If it's something super urgent, our escalation method is you call me on the phone. If I don't get a call on the phone, don't be surprised that I haven't read your email at 7 o'clock at night the following morning when I first walk into the office. It's just not a realistic expectation of me.
Yeah, I remember years ago, I got a phone call from my sister. She said, are you mad at me? He says, what do you mean? He says, I instant messaged you almost 20 minutes ago and you didn't respond. I said, I log into Facebook once a year like clockwork. I am not on social media. I said, if you want to talk to me, pick up the phone. So it's a very, very good point. And so having those expectations and setting expectations for others, because it's always on culture. I understand how we get there. What we can do is you still have to be available. It's a CISO. If something hits the fan, if I get a little alert that comes in there, I use Red Canary, for example. And if my phone rings at 10:30 at night and the caller ID is Red Canary, I'm picking up the call. And that means I'm probably going to get out, drag out of bed and go figure out what's going on. Is it serious or not? Because I've got it set such that you don't get many false positives and things such as that. The other thing you've got there is what you call productivity theater. And I remember years ago, when I worked for Ernst & Young, I got hired to run their Wall Street security practice. And that's what brought me up to Manhattan in September of 2001. And you started work about 8 o'clock in the morning. And as a senior manager, you were still expected to be working at 8 p.m., 12 hours to a half day, at which point the partner would come along and say, okay, come on, let's go out to dinner. And then you would have your business dinner, so to speak, and you'd get a chance to say, what have you accomplished and what are you working on and what's your new client and things like that. But absolutely productivity theater, I would say, because early on, you might not have had that many clients to work on, or you might have finished up your deliverable, but you still had to be there. Do we have that same mentality still going on in a lot of businesses where we're more taking attendance than we are inventorying accomplishment?
I mean, I think there's definitely this culture where a lot of times it's the humble brag of, oh yeah, I've been crushing 70-hour weeks or whatever that number is. Well, I don't really care if you crushed a 70-hour week. I care what you delivered during that week, right? It's not the number of tickets you did. It's the number of attacks you stopped. And so making sure we're tying it back to what significant accomplishments did you do? These outcome-based metrics are really the key here. Because at the end of the day, nobody cares how many hours you work. They care about the results you produced.
And then, of course, FOMO, fear of missing out. There's something going on. Wait a minute, this might be important. This could be big. This could be something that's going to impact my future, my career, my whatever. Or I want to learn about it. And so as a result, we end up a little bit like a kid in a candy shop. I want. How do we turn off that fear of missing out? Because at some point in time, there's a lot of things you should miss out on. It just means better judgment up front. But occasionally, yeah, you might miss the boat. But as long as you don't wait too long, you're not going to miss it too badly.
This is where I would say we all have different points in our lives. When you are a young, single person, you probably have a lot more time that you can dedicate to the office than when you're married with children. And what I would say is the fear of missing out should probably be about your family, right? I love work. I hope a lot of people enjoy what they do. But work is no replacement for, you know, happiness in the home. And so, you know, having that fear of missing my kids' baseball game, fear of missing, you know, a church activity, fear of missing just having a nice family dinner with the wife. Those are things I think I should focus my fear of missing out instead of fear of missing out, you know, some meeting in the office or some, you know, happy hour after the office where things happen. So, you know, just figure out what's really important to you in life. I think, you know, a lot of people talk about how, you know, when they're closer to death, nobody says, I wish I would have worked more hours in the office place. You know, it's, I wish I would have spent more time with my friends and loved ones.
Interesting. And I think recalibrating what we're afraid of missing out of is probably absolutely key to that, because we are going to have more opportunities in life than we can actually engage in. It's a nice luxury to have. It's not like we're living a couple thousand years ago where, okay, well, we planted the crops, so let's wait 3 months or 4 months or 5 months. Or, okay, the sheep are out grazing, so let's wait to the end of the day and bring them back, and not a whole lot to do. Life gets more interesting. So what are some of the defense mitigation strategies? One of the things you talk about, which I loved, it was the idea of a digital sunset. Some cutoff for your work devices. Sure, if there's an urgent emergency, it's got to get through. We get that. But routine messages, routine emails, oh, let me go ahead and whittle down my inbox so it's not so big tomorrow morning. Let it go. In fact, in consonance with that, I've also heard some people that if your mornings are your most productive, do your deep thinking and then turn on your email. If you get up at 5 in the morning and you can work from 5 to 7, then turn on your email, well, you're still got to jump over most people if you start your email at 7 a.m. But if you start getting bogged down and, oh, man, what about this and things such as that, what other ways have we got to defend ourselves in this phase, which is the persistence phase of busy as the new stupid?
I really like the outcome-based metrics, and I'll just give you an example. When people work for me, there's always two types of metrics they have. One is what's called the status quo. If you're on the third-party risk management team, you're expected to produce 40 third-party risk management reports that go out the door. But then the other thing I really have is what I call a signature accomplishment. What are you going to do to improve the third-party risk management program process holistically so everybody can do it faster? And I'll just give you an example. We used to have this report where we would ask people to fill out 200 things. And then we used to also ask them to fill out a ISO 27000 or a SOC 2 report that they were, you know, had in their organization. And what you're going to see is there's a lot of duplicativeness between these two things. So one person on my team said, hey, I'm going to go through all of these things to figure out if they submit a SOC 2 or an ISO, they don't actually have to fill out 80% of the questions because we're viewing these as redundant. And that was their thing. They spent a lot of time and they focused that out. And now everybody who submitted that SOC 2 saved 80% of the questions they had to fill out. So these types of outcome-based, where they drive a signature accomplishment that really makes everything better versus a very tactical, just crank out another third-party risk assessment, I think is the key. And this is a way where we can show what's the outcome. Well, I actually reduced 80% of the questions for perpetuity on the third-party risk assessment process. And these, I think, are the things where it's much smarter than say, well, how many hours did you work to do all 40, you know, third-party risk assessments? Like, no one cares if you get it done in 10 hours, you get it done in 60 hours. We just care that we get the 40 through so that we can make sure we can handle the number of vendors we have as a company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the term you had also here I liked was joy of missing out. I had not heard that before, so I don't know whether that's something you came up with or saw someplace else, but it's an interesting concept.
Yeah. Yeah, so I will completely highlight that a lot of these things were things that I put together, but there definitely was some inspiration taken from Gemini and Claude. I'm always a big fan of I write something, and then I usually spit it in. I say, make it more catchy and grammatically correct. And sometimes they'll just improve my wording. And JOMO, or joy of missing out, is one such example.
Interesting. Yeah. And we had this conversation a while ago, is that I found out as you're writing your book, you had some brilliant ideas in there. And, you know, I said, well, why are you giving it to AI after you've written your brilliant stuff? And he says, well, it cleans it up a little bit more. And I said, yeah, but wouldn't you want it to be your own? And I think your response, which you're absolutely spot on, I said, gee, Mark, would you rather have somebody with lousy ideas who writes perfectly, or somebody with brilliant ideas who's can be cleaned up a little bit on the back end? And so let's not be afraid of engaging some of these tools, but let's not do what some people are doing, which is letting the AI do the thinking for them. And that's one of the things that I think that's really important, is be known for your own knowledge, be known for your own ideas. And then if you want to enhance your ability to communicate them effectively, if you really need the M space in your communications, or if you need dot points and highlights, then we can pretty much spot when something has gone through the AI mill. But if it's brilliant input, it's going to be cleaner, brilliant output. If it's garbage in, it might still be garbage out. I don't know. So anyway, we're kind of going down a little rat hole on there. But let's go over to look at defense evasion. How do people and get around our defenses that are trying to protect our time that allow us to be way too busy?
Yeah, the first thing I will say is it's a slow erosion, right? And I'll just give you the example of when I left the CIA and I went to Capital One, I was really surprised because now I could bring my phone into the office, right? I could put it in my pocket with me. And I thought that would be super helpful. And boy, oh boy, did I actually start to hate it, because now they could reach me on the weekends. Now they could reach me and say, why aren't you responding? And I was like, you know, so sometimes these things where we're like, oh, I just want the flexibility. We're seeing these things change, right? And so it's really about stepping back to say, what are healthy boundaries for me? And maybe my healthy boundaries is I stop work at 5 p.m. or whatever that time is. And then after that, if you really need something, like I said, you got to call me on the phone because I'm not looking at emails or Slack messages at this point in time.
Yeah, there we go. So boundary erosion, also confusion of priorities. Again, we talked before about the tyranny of the urgent, the important versus urgent. And it's in our mind to be able to understand, if I don't respond to this right away, what happens? Well, is it an inconvenience or is it a catastrophe? That's a good way to tell whether it was important or not. And so to a large extent, if we stop confusing that, and if we allow the phone to go to voicemail, that's what I tell people, that's what voicemail is for. Okay, if that you are engaged in something that's high priority, that call is not going to be a higher priority, then take a message. Okay, if it keep calling you back 2, 3, 4 times, okay, fine, pick it up. Something's going on.
I think the big piece here is it's okay to say no. What happens is there's this inevitable scope creep that happens to everyone, mm-hmm. right? Where you just get death by a thousand cuts and more people asking you to do things. And you can say, hey, this isn't important or urgent, but you still do it instead of actually maybe taking the step up and saying, I have no resources to do this. I'm going to have to tell you no. And that's a tough thing to do because people want to be liked, people want to be helpful. But sometimes you have to set your delineation of, I just don't have the resources to do these things. This is a nice to have, but let me tell you the 10 other, you know, very important things I have to do first, and I'm just never going to get around to doing this thing. And I think that's the one thing a lot of us are, is we're too much of a people pleaser. We don't like to tell people no.
There's two things that come to mind. One of them is this: if you're dealing with a boss who tends to overload you in things such as that, you can simply go ahead and say, I can accomplish this task by not doing this. Which one would you rather be finished? Okay, so you're really, what you're kind of summing it up. So I want you to do both. I said, I know you want me to do both, and I love to do both, but in the time I have available, the resource available, I get one over the other. Make a choice. The other thing is this, is human psychology is that people acknowledge a reason, even if it's a lousy one. So they've done studies where they said, okay, fine, people are lined up in front of a photocopier to get stuff, and someone walks right to the head of the line and says, excuse me, I need to cut in here because I need to make some copies right now. And most people say, okay, what a stupid, of course you need to make copies. It's a copier line. But if you had any reason whatsoever, as compared to you just walk up and start copying, people start. So think about that and understand a little bit about human psychology. I'd love to do this for you now, but I've got a commitment to my family tonight. Okay. Yeah. Why? I'm more important than your family? Pretty unlikely, but give them some sort of reason, because psychologically humans will then be more satisfied with a no when it comes with a reason.
And then now, the other one that also really sticks out to me here is this delegation avoidance one. And I just think as a CISO, maybe you need something done and you know you can do it in 1 hour. But if it takes your staff to do it because they're not as skilled as you in something, it might take them 5 hours. You're like, I don't have 5 hours to wait. And so you don't delegate it. And then ultimately next week, you have to do the exact same thing over and over and over. But sometimes by spending the time to delegate to someone, yes, it takes them 5 hours to do it the first time, but maybe the second time they can do it in an hour. And so, you know, the second, the third, the fourth time on this repeat task, you would actually save yourself the 1 hour every time versus by not delegating, you're just always giving yourself that 1 hour of work. And so it's knowing when to make that investment and delegate and train somebody up. And I think that's really important that we do. I think most CISOs are overworked because they are poor delegators.
And it's a matter of also understanding the confidence of where you're at. So let me go back and tell a little bit of a C story. I had served on 12 different selection boards in the Navy, and one of them was a selection board for command. Now, if you want to be a commander and a commanding officer in the Navy Reserve, you'd think that, well, that's what you're commander for, right? 6% was the selection rate for command. Easier to get your kid into Harvard than it is to be able to get command. So if you get a command, that's the last thing you want to do is screw it up, right? Because you won't get another one. And I saw officers that they would get that commander command. They would grab that brass ring. And then when they had to turn in the report, they said, hey, Lieutenant, give me that. Let me make sure everything is right. Okay. Hey, Chief, give me that. Let me do it. And they were in the loop on it, and they had to make sure that all the paperwork looked perfect going up. Well, what did that do? It did not develop their people. And one of the things I try to import to people is in leadership is a difference than just management. Management, you get the work done. Leadership, you're developing your people. Now, I was privileged to have 9 command tours, which is crazy. But the Navy kept saying, yeah, you know what you're doing? Left seat. Yeah, go ahead and run the thing again. Run the thing again. And so in doing so, what I realized is what matters and what doesn't. So that report that needs to go in, let the lieutenant write it. So he makes a couple of mistakes. Guess what? Comes back, got red ink on it. What are you going to do about it? Well, I'm going to fix it, sir. Okay, do it. And next time, what happens? It comes back without red ink. What happens the next time? That person's confident in what they're doing. And so what you do is when you realize, when is it okay for a mistake to be made? Perfection is the enemy of success. And so as a result, if you want to be a leader, you have to let your people figure stuff out. Otherwise, kids, I'm sorry, we're not going to let you try to walk until you can guarantee that you're not going to face plant at 14 months or however old you are. You're going to go down, you come up, and you're going to go down and come back and things like that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point here. And it's really important to kind of go and look back at things. One of the areas that I was maybe mentioning before, we struggle to delegate or we struggle to say no. And, you know, maybe a way to think about that, it's an opportunity cost. It's not that you're just saying no to this thing. It's you're saying yes to other things that are more important. And when you do that and you show that really good execution, then they trust you with more things like more command tours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's how you're in confidence. So let's talk about defense and mitigation strategies in the defense evasion phase of busy as a new stupid.
Yeah. So the first thing that I would actually really highlight is the most important things. Think about every day, if there's 2 or 3 things you're going to accomplish, what is that going to be? And if you do just that, you can say, I had a successful day. The most important thing I had to do is book my flight today for my travel trip. Because if I don't get a flight, I just can't go on the trip tomorrow. Okay, that's pretty important to get done today, right? And there's always something like that, right? Maybe it's, hey, it's end of the year and I actually have to get every one of the performance reviews done for the 20 people that report to me. Well, there's deadlines when things have to be met. So sometimes it's just really focusing on those. Another example is, let's call it this Pareto principle or this 80-20 task analysis, which is identifying which of the 20% of activities produce 80% of the results. Remember, our goal is not to be busy. Our goal is to be impactful. And so figuring out what are the most important things that drive the results and doing more of those things, that's really, really important to focus on.
Excellent insight. So let's take a look at the last phase here, which is impact on busy as a new stupid, and some of the techniques that are used to go ahead and violate us in this impact phase.
Yeah, so when you think of the long-term impact of being busy, it really makes you strategically blind. If I am busy with all of these activities, I tend to be reactionary. And the problem is that just creates more and more work, right? Just think of how much work does it take to do a post ransomware breach response compared to just configuring and preventing the ransomware. It's a lot of work. I mean, you look at someone who's just had a massive breach, take like Tim Brown at SolarWinds. I mean, he's going on a couple years of responding to legal, you know, implications. That's a lot of work. So getting out of that and really being able to do more of the preventative things, and I think is super, super helpful. And the other one I would also really call out here is this relationship erosion, which means a lot of times we focus on being busy, but really we've talked about this multiple times. The most important thing are your political skills, how you have time to connect with people, right? And what I mean by this, the most important thing you do with somebody may be just having a 1-hour lunch and building a relationship with them. That may pay way more dividends than responding to 50 emails that week. And so are you focusing on being busy and responding to the emails, or are you focusing on being impactful, which might have really good relationships with the CFO and the CEO because you're going to lunch and you're, you know, really connecting and having those relationships. So then when you say, hey, I need help, they're super likable to you. They really enjoy working with you, and you have that stronger impact that you just don't get without it.
Bingo. And I think that's very, very important to understand. We've talked that a number of times about it. The ultimate skill level is going to be at the political, which you can't measure that in terms of your leadership ability, your management ability, or your, even your technical ability. They're a bit orthogonal, but they're all important career defenses or career development. We talk about defense mitigation strategies here. Vision boarding sessions. Interesting idea. Talk about what you mean by that.
Yeah, so if I just wait till the good ideas come to me for my next year strategy, I got reality, it's not going to come. Mm-hmm. But if I actually take a day and I do an offsite with my team and we do something I call this exercise of the roses, buds, and thorns, where we give everybody a bunch of post-its and we all start putting what are the three things that need to change, or what are the three things that are really working well, or what are the three new ideas we should do, and we start putting all those together, I can have a lot more success. So it's really time blocking to do the most important things, right? If I don't time block to be creative, if I don't time block to take time for feedback, well, guess what? Those things just don't happen out of thin air. And that's where we have to have time to do this.
Yeah. And I think pre-commitment strategy, being able to go ahead and before you make a key decision, make sure that, you know, it's just not shoot from the hip. There's some things that are required emergency response, but other things have more strategic impact. And so we want to make sure that we're not just deciding fast to get it off our plate, but we're going ahead and we're giving it the due consideration that it needs to be.
Yeah, there's a lot of value in diversity of thought. And just think of an example. I might be pitching an idea that I think is really good, but I may not see other people's perspectives. I may not have socialized that idea and gotten the pre-meeting buy-in and all these other things. And what happens is I just have one piece of the picture and I'm very limited in my viewpoints, right? So let's just say I build a PowerPoint and it's technically right, but the PowerPoint is ugly. Right. I am not a graphic designer. I don't have graphic design skills. And it looks like an engineer built this thing. Well, you know, if I know that's a thing, I probably want to talk to, you know, the people on my team who just are like these artists that can just wow people. And they can look at it and be like, hey, Ross, just do these little tricks and we're going to use this format. We're going to change some of the colors. You got too many words here. We're going to replace this with a graphic. And that little bit of just, you know, working with people can strengthen your idea. And now when you go and pitch, it's just like, oh, the chef's kiss. Mwah. You know, this is something that like, wow, not only is it good from a technical perspective, but it's also quite visually impressive. And now everybody wins, right?
Let's go ahead and wrap up as we're kind of at the end of our episodes. We've been talking about busy is the new stupid and the model that put together here, which is really kind of based on a MITRE ATT&CK framework. So all of us really understand it, but we're going to go ahead and crowdsource this thing over to our LinkedIn page for people to provide us with some input. So when you have things that people get initial access into your life, or they go ahead and they interfere with your execution, or they're able to maintain some persistence into your life when you don't want them there, or they evade your defenses, or they are going ahead and at that impact phase, let us know. And we'd be happy to give you credit for it. We'd like to build this out a little bit. It might be more than just sort of a fun project. It might be actually a useful metric that allows us to go ahead and communicate with others. So when we have to say no, we can say, well, why? Because busy is the new stupid. So Ross Young, thank you very much for your insights. This has been wonderful as always. To all of our listeners and our viewers out there, if you're not following us on LinkedIn or on YouTube or Substack newsletter, please do so. We've got a lot of information for you. We love helping you out with your career, and let us know if there's anything else we can do for you.
Well, thanks again. I think this is just such an important topic. And remember, you're only as effective as you maximize the value of your time. It's the one resource we're all limited on. You can't buy more back, right? There's no 80-year-old who can buy 40 more years of life to go back to being 40. So making sure you maximize every hour that you're using is the key. And don't be the new type of stupid.
Good wisdom. So with that, take care. And till next time, stay safe out there.